cards and there's 6 Ryan shooting at you. Shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, September 21st, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today are three football writers who lose even when they come out on top. We got Phil Kegler.
How's it going?
Kyle Maestri.
As our law of mass comm professor said today, about to go hard for 50 minutes.
And we got Mike DeFernando.
What's up, guys?
All right, now obviously we got a lot to talk about. We're going to just break down pretty much every aspect of the Tennessee game that we can. Like I said, it was a win, even though it may have felt like a loss for the Gators. Let's just talk about this. Was it Florida playing poorly, Tennessee playing extremely well? What do we think about that?
I think it's Florida playing badly. I mean, the line was 28 points, and most of the talk the week leading up to the game was whether or not UF could win by 50 points or more. Obviously, a lot of it got ridiculous. I don't think the Gators are ever going to put up 100 points in an SEC game, although it was fun to think about. Tennessee had a game plan to slow down the game, run the ball, play zone coverage, and UF didn't really adapt that well sometimes.
UF played miserably. I guess Tennessee had a good game plan, but really just UF played horrible. Tebow had the worst game probably he's ever played in front of the home crowd. Turned the ball over twice, once on the 20-yard line, their own 20-yard line, setting Tennessee up for a score. And the other time he was, going to ice the win, go in, make it 30-6. And he coughed it up, and then Tennessee returned it to about the 40, their own 40, and then scored on that drive. So, really just Florida shot themselves in the foot. No receivers could make a play. The defense played great, which is their saving grace, and probably will be their saving grace anytime the offense fails this season. And give some credit to Monty Kiffin as well, because he had Eric Berry in all the right places.
Absolutely. Let's talk about what Florida did poorly, or again, what Tennessee did well. To keep it low scoring, I know all of our score predictions were outrageous. We all predicted Florida to score like 60 points. I think McCall was the only one to not predict Florida to score 56 points or above. So let's talk about that. What did Tennessee's defense do so well, and what did Florida's offense do poorly?
Well, it's a case of Tebow making bad decisions. Tennessee came out and played zone. They took away UF's deep threat, or that was the idea anyway. And Tebow just held on the ball too long, ran too many times. And then, it's almost like they didn't go to the rushing tack enough, because the three running backs, Demps, Moody, and Rainey, all average like 6 yards a carry and above. But then you have Tebow, who rushes 24 times for 75 yards, 80 yards. It was really just a matter of Tennessee's defense came out and did something that Florida said maybe they weren't ready for them to do, or it wasn't what they expected, but they didn't do a very good job adapting. Tebow said today, after he looked back at the Tennessee film, that he should have checked down to Demps and Rainey a lot more and used some bubble screens.
My question is, how are they not ready for this? This is the game they've circled on the calendar. How are they not ready for whatever Tennessee could throw at them come Saturday?
Well, I mean, it's a matter of, it's interesting because Florida's like this bullseye team now. It's certainly no really excuse for them, but what they've said now is after all three games, teams that come in and play Florida have done completely different things on defense than what they've done on film. Now, obviously, for Tennessee, that's a product of Monty Kiffin coming in and running a different defense, and he's been in the NFL for plenty of years, so he's smart and probably didn't show too much in Tennessee's first two games. But, I mean, you just have to adapt better. I mean, Tennessee takes away the deep ball. You got to use a short pass, use Demps, Rainey. We know now that Demps had a 101 fever and wasn't feeling very well. But, I mean, somebody's got to make a play at wide receiver. People got to make better decisions. There's about 100 things they have to do better on offense.
And everyone talks about, we all knew going in that Tennessee's secondary was really the place where they had a lot of talent and they were going to probably give Florida a problem. But I think the Tennessee defensive line really played well. They got a lot of pressure on Tebow. They had a couple of sacks. They disrupted him a lot. So I think the Tennessee D line kind of surprised.
Well, they used a lot of zone blitzes too. So they were bringing guys, some linebackers off the edge, kind of overloading some sides. And that's how they really got to him, I thought. I don't think they got any times where they just rushed four and got to the quarterback. But Kiffin was bringing people while playing a zone, so you never had one-on-one matchups where Florida receivers can get open. And I think they really did a good job of identifying where the talent is for Florida, which is in the backfield, and saying, okay, we're going to try to make the receivers beat me. And they didn't. They played pathetically, in my opinion. If you ask the coaches and Billy Gonzalez, receivers coach, they'll tell you that all three of them graded out as champions, Riley Cooper, Brandon James, and David Nelson. I don't know how they graded out as champions. None of them did anything. Apparently, they all blocked very well on every play. That's what I've been led to believe.
How else could Tebow average 3 yards a carry without them blocking like that? Come on.
No, it was really ridiculous. No UF player had 30 yards receiving in the game.
Is that ridiculous?
Which I've been trying. I've been dusting off old record books. And as far back as I can find any box scores from 1997 season through Saturday, UF had never had a game where no player had 30 yards receiving. It's 156 games in a row. I mean, 30 yards receiving is like a joke.
Yeah, like,
it's
like one catch,
one big
offense,
play,
yeah.
Two small plays. So it's not that it's that hard to do, so it's not that surprising. But, like, to have no one, Aaron Hernandez was the team's leading receiver. He had 4 catches for 26 yards. I mean, it was awful.
What did Tennessee's offense do so well, though? Because in a way, it was like their offense was their best defense because it kept Florida's offense off the field for a little while. You know, just running that slow game, clocking it out.
I mean, I thought Tennessee ran the ball on Florida's defense better than I thought they were going to be able to. We saw the Gators. I mean, overall, obviously, the Gators, you know, only gave up 13 points, and they probably wouldn't even have given up that touchdown if Tebow doesn't turn over the ball and give it back to Tennessee. That was a big swing. But, I mean, I was a little surprised by how much Tennessee was able to run against Florida, especially because all week everybody knew the Volunteers were going to run because Tennessee's quarterback Jonathan Crompton is, like, the worst quarterback in the SEC and was, like, 11 of 16 for 95 yards and 2 picks. He's awful. So they were just going to pound the ball, pound the ball, pound the ball. They ran on third and long. And, you know, sometimes it was UF running the Joker package, 3-down linemen. Other times they just missed a lot of tackles on Saturday.
I think you got to give a little bit of credit to the Tennessee offensive line, too. 3 of those starters were hurt, and they didn't really play like they played really well, actually. They got some push, and Hardesty and Brown played really well.
Well, I don't think Tennessee's offense really played well. I don't really want to give them any credit. They didn't really do much except, you know, drive the field a little bit and kick some field goals every once in a while. But I think what Florida learned about themselves is that, one, the defensive tackle position is kind of up in the air. They had all 4 guys rotating in there between Hunter, Marsh, Sanders, and Jay Howard, and all of them were just getting blown off the ball pretty much on every play. They were just moving them wherever the heck they wanted to. And then, you know, in the prior week of practice, Myers said that the Joker is fine against the run, they'll be okay, and that got exposed multiple times, which I don't really think he ever believed that package was a run-stopping package, but I do think he just thinks his team's so good where it's like, well, we could just stop the run out of the Joker if we need to, and that obviously wasn't the case. There were times where, you know, if you know the team's going to run, just keep 8 guys in the box at all times. Yeah. Like, why couldn't they just do that? I don't understand.
Like, especially, like, they have corners that can guard man-to-man. Exactly. Like, Tennessee's wide receivers were not going to blow up like Janoris Jenkins and Joe Hayden. Play man-to-man on the edge, and put 8 people in the box.
And even if the receivers beat them, Crompton can't make a throw.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We saw multiple times Crompton can't make a throw. Yeah. So they should have had everybody in the box. They should have had big bodies on the field. You know, Spikes was out with injury for a lot of the game, so that's one of your best run stoppers who's not in there, so I give him a little bit of a pass. But at the same time, I just felt like the game plan on defense could have been a little better. At the same time, they played very well. They held them 210 yards of total offense. You can't do much better than that. So, but there were just too many big plays on third down. I think that's a bit major concern. On the drive where Tennessee scored the touchdown at the end, a screen pass on like 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 12 went for 20 yards or whatever and kept the drive going. So there's too much of that on third down.
A banner day for Jonathan Crompton, though. Only 2 interceptions.
That's
good time for him. Yeah. Let's talk about what I guess it was Urban Meyer said earlier about, you know, Tennessee with their offensive game plan, not even really trying to win. Phil, do you have this?
I don't have the quote in front of me. Yeah, but on his Sunday conference call with reporters, Myers is pretty flippant in the fact that he just thought that Tennessee didn't really try to win the game between running the ball towards the end of the game. And I thought it up in the press box on Saturday, but at the same time, it was like maybe they weren't trying to win, but they were only going to lose worse if they started throwing the ball around the field. Like, I mean, Florida made a couple of mistakes. You know, I don't know what I do if I'm Lane Kiffin because you really – it was really funny. SI.com writer Andy Staples wrote today that he thinks Tennessee should install the option because Jonathan Crompton's so bad that just for the rest of the season they should just run the option because they have a decent defense and a defense offensive line and can run the ball, which probably would not work in the SEC. But it's just they ran the ball. They didn't even run no huddle. They were just taking their time meandering down the field.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into that, what's more alarming about the Crompton situation to me isn't how bad Crompton is. It's that there's nobody behind him pushing him to get on the field.
Yeah.
How is that your number one quarterback? Like, okay, you get a Jonathan Crompton on your team, that's fine. How is there nobody on the bench that can do better than Jonathan Crompton?
When they all transfer out before the season starts.
Apparently. Yeah. God, that's just incredible to me. But about the comments about them not trying, this goes back to, I know Deef agrees with me because we sit next to each other at the games. When Eric Berry picked off that pass around the UF 21-yard line, you're not going to get many chances to score a touchdown against that defense. You're never going to be that close again to start with for the rest of the game. That has to go for a touchdown. You at least have to try to score a touchdown from there. And they move the ball a little bit. They get it inside the five. I think it was fourth and goal from the three. And they kick a field goal. They kick a 20-yard field goal. Then they cut the score to 10 to 6 instead of going for the tie at 10 to 10, and that was the first and biggest indication to me that they were just trying to not get embarrassed. Because if you're trying to win, you have to go for it there. You just have to against that defense. You're not going to get the ball 3 yards out too many times.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously agree with that. But I think also that some of the play calling wasn't necessarily done because they were trying not to lose, but I think running the ball for them was definitely their best chance to win in a lot of circumstances. So I think Phil's right. I think airing it out like late in the game like that, even though you probably should do that, wasn't going to help them.
But even so, like, you at least got to run some no huddle. Like, they didn't even seem in a big hurry at the end of the game. It's like you're down 2 scores with, like, 6.5 minutes left, and they're just rushing the ball and, like, taking 20 seconds of play to get it in.
No, you got to pass the ball at the very end there. You could say that they didn't have to pass the ball for the first 3.5 quarters, but when you get the ball back and you're down 2 scores and there's only 6 minutes left, you have to pass the ball. Either if you don't pass the ball, you're not trying to win, because you're not going to break an 80-yard run, most likely, and just score and go back and get the ball back. You got to throw the ball, and they didn't throw the ball. They weren't willing to do it, so they weren't willing to try to win at the end.
And they didn't have to go deep with the ball to throw the ball. They could throw screen passes. Like, they threw that screen pass to Bryce Brown. They picked up a first down. They could have thrown, like, little dink and dunk passes that could have moved the ball.
And even by the end, some play action pass rollout. I mean, just you could do something to try and put Crompton in a decent situation. Like, you run the ball 25 times.
And they did, I think, for a lot of the game. They tried to move him out of the pocket, so and they gave him 2 easy targets and, like, forget about the other 3 quarters of the field. We're just going to give you this little section where you have 2 guys to throw to. So they did a good job of that. They should have done more of that at the end. And, again, maybe questionable game planning. I feel like, you know, Florida's going to play man-to-man on the outside. Get a couple routes that might work on the outside. Usually any kind of sideline stop route, stuff like that, is going to work against man-to-man coverage. Just have him make 10-yard throws to the outside. I feel like any college quarterback should be able to do that. So, I don't know. They didn't give Crompton. Crompton can't do anything, apparently.
I was going to say, can we call him a college quarterback?
I guess not. I don't know. But it's pathetic that he's starting for a team like Tennessee, for an SEC school.
Is Jordan Reed better than Jonathan Crompton?
No. I'm going to say no.
John Brantley better than Jonathan Crompton.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Far better.
Tenfold.
Wow. Yeah.
That's the thing. I think that's the reasoning behind it. Like, they would rather go down by 10 points than give Crompton an opportunity to screw everything up horrifically and throw 4 interceptions and turn for a touchdown. Well, no, I agree.
You're going to lose 8 games then by that.
Right.
Like,
it's ridiculous. Get somebody else in there and can play quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with the transfer situation, but I believe there are 2 backup quarterbacks transferred. I know one guy from Chattanooga transferred back to University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Not a good football school, just to not be the backup for Lane Kiffin at Tennessee.
How bad do you have to be Jonathan Crompton's backup?
I don't know, but last I heard they
you're so bad you could be Jonathan Crompton's backup.
This may have changed, but the last I heard was that they were recruiting a former Gator Cam Newton to come play.
Oh, yeah, really? 2010. Thank God. He's much better than Jonathan Crompton.
So that can make the next year's game very interesting.
As if it wasn't already going to be interesting.
I mean, I think the 2010 game could be really interesting from, like, losing a lot of people. Florida, I don't know. I just think it could be really in Knoxville. I think it's going to be a good game.
I do, too. Glad I'll be there.
Yeah. What do you think of Kiffin's strategy that he said after the game? I don't know if this is just him being a master of revisionist history or what, but he said his little plan worked perfectly, that he got all the pressure off his players and took it on himself. Do you believe that at all?
No, not at all. Because it's cool for him to say the media didn't go after his players, which may or may not have been true, but I guarantee you all the Gators on the field went after his players as hard as they could because of all the stuff that they said. Like, I think his players did a tremendous job of, like, responding to that. Like, okay, we're getting the best shot from the best team in the country, and we're still going to play our hardest and go after them. And Eric Berry, you got a tremendous leader on defense who is, you know, just as incredible on defense as Tim Tebow is on offense. He's just a tremendous player. I couldn't have been more impressed with him. So he did a little bit of everything. You got somebody who's, you know, the backbone leading the team. They did a great job responding, but for Kiffet, like, how dare he take credit for the way his players played? Like, oh, my master plan caused them to be able to go out there and play free. No, the fact that, you know, you had good leadership on the field and you had some guys who weren't willing to back down, like, I at least give Meyer credit. He never takes credit away from his players, and I thought Kiffin really did his players a disservice by saying, oh, I allowed them to go play like that.
Something I agree with really early on is really what the game boiled down to me, and it's what I wrote about in my column today, is that Tennessee got Florida's best shot. The most talented team in America. They're hyped up. They're playing at home. It's the first SEC game, first real game. It, like, Kiffin did everything he could to motivate Florida, and Florida won 23-13. So, like, from that point, there's no way it's not, like, just completely a letdown, because literally you will not be more motivated for a game than this game, except possibly if they play Ole Miss in the SEC Championship.
Now, I agree that Florida didn't play their best. At the same time, Tennessee was never going to win that game, right? Like, at no point Tennessee have even a shot to win that game. So, I mean, you know, we can really talk. Tim Tebow's fumble made this way closer than it should have been, because if they punch it in from there, even if they don't punch it in, they kick a field goal from there, the score goes to 26-6, and they're starting on likely not a short field for the next drive, and then we're probably having a slightly different conversation afterwards. So I'm going to say the score was closer than the game actually was, because at no point did probably anyone in the stadium feel like, oh no, Tennessee's going to win. So,
well, it probably also helps Tebow's pick way deep in his territory. Also another gave another score. Yeah, right. That's at least a field goal. I mean, when you look at it...
Tebow swung the score by at least...
like 21 points?
No, I'm not going to say at least 21 points, but probably 17 points. I'll give a swing.
I mean, Florida only punted one time. Yeah, like, that was... Tennessee never really stopped Florida. Exactly. They stopped them to field goal. Like, I will admit, I was shocked when Brandon James takes the opening kickoff to the Tennessee 30,
and that doesn't get a touchdown.
That's, like, automatic. I was like, this can't start any worse for Tennessee. Like, that was, like, a moral victory for the Volunteers right there. But then, like, at the same point, they never got him off the field. They put it one time, and then there was the kneel down at the end. But, I mean, they still never stopped him. Tebow stopped himself, and, you know.
Let's talk about Tebow a little more, then, because that's one interception, one fumble, like, two turnovers in the game for Tebow. Deifer, you were somewhat of a defender of Tebow after the game. What do you have to say about Tebow's performance?
Yeah, I mean, Tim made some bad plays. He threw the interception and the fumble, but I think there's a lot of other plays where he made really great plays, and I think he kind of kept Florida moving forward. If it wasn't for the one fumble at the end, I think you're looking at Tebow's game completely differently.
Maybe true, but that was a huge play in the game, in my opinion. It was probably the play of the game.
But there was also, how many third downs do you see him scrambling around, pick up first downs, keep the drives moving, lead down to get field goals and a touchdown?
But the thing is, like, Tebow doesn't fumble. That's, like, what makes him so great. It's like Meyer says time after time, like, we give him the ball at the end of the game because he just never gives it up. And yet, there he is. I mean, obviously, they probably were going to lose this game. But that, if that was a different game, if they were only up a touchdown, a field goal, stretching for extra yards and losing the ball, could lose them the game.
Yeah. I mean, he made a couple very good plays. Don't get me wrong. He moved the chains multiple times. But I think, you know, anything he did with his legs, he could have been doing through the air, but wasn't, because he just refused to give the ball up from any of those plays where he should have been hitting receivers that were wide open, 10, 15 yards downfield, 7 yards downfield. So I feel like... we gave him too much credit for running when he only got 3 yards of carry, and it was largely a product of him not being decisive in the passing game. And I feel like the negative plays that he made outweighed the positive plays he made today. On Saturday, I'm sorry.
I also feel like Steve Adazio called his number too much. Now, there was a lot of times that Tebow just scrambled off and ran, but there was more called QB runs than normal for them. And, you know, I don't see the reason for it when you have... Even if Demps is out of the game because he's got 101 feet or whatever, you had Randy and Moody being very, very productive. Give him the ball. Let him run the ball.
Right, Tebow only threw for 115 yards, but I would argue that a lot of that was because the receiver play was rather poor.
I agree. Absolutely. I agree, but you don't think any of that falls on Tebow?
I think a little bit of that. I think there were times when he could have checked down to the running backs and made some plays to Hernandez or some of the shorter stuff, but I don't think anyone was getting open deep for him.
No, that's fine. I agree with that, but I think there were multiple times where he didn't go through any sort of progression. There was like, I'm going to make one read on this play, two at the most. If that's not there, I'm tucking it. I'm getting out of here.
He didn't do everything he could to try to throw the ball. He sort of took it upon himself. Like, I'm just going to run this. I have to do this. Also, statistically, his worst quarterback rating is in his entire career as a starter. So, can't say he had a great game.
He didn't have a great game, but I don't think he was nearly as bad as the rest of you guys think.
He had a bad game, I would say. You don't think he had a bad game?
I will step in for Deifer and say I also didn't say it a bad game. I graded him at like C+, B-
You're looking at him at what he usually does, but for like he didn't have a horrible game. Yeah,
What do you no against anyone? He had less than 200 total yards in the game. What player in the country that's not you guys are giving him too much credit for what he usually does? Because if you look at any other player in the country, if Jonathan Crompton would have had the same game, you would have said Jonathan Crompton did not play well today. But since he's Tim Tebow, it's like, oh, he did so much on third down to help his team move the sticks. If any other quarterback in any other game passes for or has less than 200 total yards, has two costly turnovers, we look at that guy and say he really hurt his team today.
I mean, if Jonathan Crompton did it, we'd be like, he only threw one interception and had one fumble. That's a good game, yeah. But when Tebow does it, it's like you expect so much more of him. You expect him to, you know, be making all the plays that he can, and you expect him not to make mistakes. He's thrown, what, 12 now career interceptions? There you go. You saw 1/12 of his career interceptions
but
in that
I
game.
I strongly disagree with the notion that I'm only saying he played bad because he normally – because I'm grading him against himself. I think you guys are doing the opposite. I think if we watched you know, Aaron Korp do this or so, some other quarterback from across the country, you would have said, oh, he had a bad game today.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going bad game only because of his third down conversions. I mean, he still had Tebow moments. He still had Tebow converting. I obviously, I'm not saying that the good completely outweighed the bad. Like, he had this great game. I didn't have him as one of my top three players from the game. But I still think the good edges out the bad.
All right, but again, we talked about a lot of this being influenced by the receivers just not being able to play well. What was the deal with the receivers? Obviously, Deontay Thompson was hurt. Not that, you know, I don't think he would have made a huge difference in that game. They still didn't throw the ball deep with the players they had on the field. What was the deal with the receivers? Are they really this bad, or was it just a bad day?
I think they're this bad. I think you're seeing really how much the loss of Percy Harvin and Lewis Murphy is going to hurt the Gators this season.
It's not just that, though. I mean, it's the loss of Percy Harvin and Lewis Murphy, but it's also the loss of Andre DeBose and Deontay Thompson being out. But, yeah, the guys on the field are actually this bad. David Nelson can't get open. I'm sorry. Like, that's just – if you watched him play the first three games, I gave him the first two. I was like, okay, have him on the field along, whatever. Let's see what he does against Tennessee. In three games, he has not gotten open. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe he can get open, but in three games, he has not gotten open. Brandon James isn't a receiver. Like, God bless him. He goes out there. He tries as hard as he can. He does what he can. But he's 5'5". He's not a receiver. I'm sorry. Like, he shouldn't be playing receiver in any more capacity than, you know, dump it down, you know, over the middle to him. So, and then other than that, Riley Cooper, who, you know, once again, he has two great games against Troy and Charleston Southern, living up to the Riley Cooper, you know, stigma that he only plays well against good teams, and then he disappears in this game, doesn't stretch the field at all for them, despite being the fastest white boy alive, or whatever Chris Rainey called him. So, yeah, there's absolutely a huge problem with the three guys that they're starting, and I think it's time to let some of the younger guys get a chance when only those guys are on the field, because they're not getting it done.
I'll say it again. I think it's a group of third receivers being forced to play first and second receiver, and you literally cannot produce like that. Hernandez, whatever, can step in as your top producer, but when you can't stretch the field vertically, you know, you can't do anything like that, you're not gonna pass well.
I mean, I think the answer is you got to start lining Jeff Dempsey up at wide receiver.
Absolutely.
I mean, regardless, he has to touch the ball more. Right. Like, well, yeah. I mean, he was sick, so yeah, he had 4 carries. But, like, all right, Chris Rainey had 9 carries. Emmanuel Mooney had 3 carries. Jeff Dempsey had 4 carries. So that is 15 or 16 carries. Like, they got touched the ball 25 times.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to assume Dempsey was actually really sick. They're not lying to us, and he was very limited in what he can do. But other than Tebow, it's very apparent that he's your best playmaker on the field, and he only touches the ball 4 times. Like, what are you really doing on offense at that point?
I mean, even Rainey, though. Yeah. I mean, Rainey averaged 7 yards a touch. Emmanuel Mooney averaged 11 yards a touch. He got the ball 3 times. You never seen from again. I mean, it's really absurd when you really want to pound the rock. Just give it to one of them.
Yeah, I think Kyle is right. I think some of the younger – they have guys on the bench that aren't playing that are way more explosive than the guys that are starting. And I'm not sure if that's Urban just being loyal to guys that are seniors, like David Nelson and Brandon James and Riley Cooper. And Cooper's probably all right. He's
all right, well, this is the but, argument that we've – you're going to take my side on this. But this is the – after the game, I had an argument with Phil and McCall because – I was railing on David Nelson, who's a super nice guy and I really like a lot and I hope he does well. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
But, like, this is in no way an attack on David Nelson as a person. He just hasn't got open in 3 games. That's all I'm going to say. So I was saying how he needs to come off the field, and I would put Omarius Hines on the field because he's fast, he's a specimen, he's strong as heck. He's obviously played the best out of the 3 next-tier guys, and he's shown that he can make plays this season. He's gotten on the field, he's caught balls, he's got open, he's broke tackles, he's made things happen on the field. Why not give him a chance when the whole unit is struggling? And then they went back to the fact that he hasn't played against a good team yet, and David Nelson has a, you know, 5-yard touchdown catch in an SEC championship game or whatever it is, and that should be enough to carry him through, you know, for as long as it takes. So I'll let Phil defend himself and then you can get in on this.
I mean, Kyle made a lot of our good points. And, I mean, I don't want to come off like a minor apologist, but I did make the point that we don't see what happens in practice. Like, their biggest thing...
And I totally agree with that, except that he always says how good Omarius Hines is in practice.
But Meyer has been known... I'm not saying... Like, it's not Meyer lying to us. But, I mean, if he's playing so well in practice, why isn't he playing? You know...
I don't know.
Meyer says every week, like, you can ask him 100 times, 100 different ways, what does a wide receiver have to do to get on the field? He says you got to do well in practice Tuesday and Wednesday. All I hear is how great Omarius Hines is in practice. I don't think he stepped on the field Saturday. Frankie Hammond had like 5 snaps but never saw a pass his way. I mean, if they're great, they've got... He said this week they have to develop someone for Kentucky. Yeah. He says they're going to have Deontay back, but then says that. So I think Deontay's going to miss again this week, honestly, if I had a bet on it right now. And I think you're going to see one of them get a shot. We'll see which one it is and how well they do.
Yeah, I think you're going to see how much Urban really believes in the whole if you're the best player, you're going to play thing. Because I don't think those 3 receivers are the best receivers they have. I think Hines and Hammond are going to have to play.
All right. We'll see it. I hope we get to see it on the field, honestly.
Okay. I do, too.
Okay, absolutely. I think Hines is just not going to be as great as everybody thinks he is. That's
well,
all I'm saying.
At least he's be better can than he do have. Worse than what they did on Saturday? That's what I want to know.
Probably not from a blocking aspect, possibly.
Okay, so, I mean, all right, that's honestly. Fine. That's fair to say. But at least put him out there when all the receivers are playing poorly and just give him a chance. Like, you can't say, we don't know how good he's going to play, so let him go out there. All we know is that when his number's been called, he's been very good so far.
Apparently, Urban Meyer and Billy Gonzalez right now would rather have David Nelson than Omarius Hines.
Yeah.
And David Nelson played almost every, like, those 3 guys, like, they really had no confidence in their depth because Cooper, Nelson, and James, like, you know, we don't think they didn't play well, but they played the whole game. I mean, so obviously there's very little confidence in the reserves.
Right. And David Nelson's a great guy, and he's a leader and all that stuff, but at what point do you trade experience for ability?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what must David Nelson must David Nelson look like in practice then if Urban's going on this ridiculous?
It's tough to watch out there for me because he's the one guy who trots out every day to talk to the media. He does, you know, he answers all the questions we ask him. He spends a significant more amount of time with us than anyone else on the team. By significant, I mean 50 times more, you know, minutes on the recorder of David Nelson than anyone else we've gotten this season. He's an extremely nice guy, extremely thoughtful. He works hard. You know, you want him to do well, but at the same time, like, he's not giving you anything. He's not helping you win out there. He's blocking well, but at the same time, get him in there when he needs to block. That's how he's been used in the past. If you're going to throw a screen, you're going to run the ball the outside, fine, bring him out on the field. But when you're in third and long passing situations, he's got to come off because he can't do anything right now.
Yeah, I think he's better as a leader than he is an actual receiver at this point because, I mean, how much can he help Hines, you know, Hammond and Lawrence grow, you know, as receivers and help teach them? You know, I think he can do more of that than he can actually getting open and catching passes at this point in the season. All right, let's talk about the defense a little bit. We already said they played extremely well. Brandon Spikes got hurt. Go ahead and give what that injury is, the details of that.
Spikes hurt his Achilles. He has tendonitis in his Achilles. So he was very limited in practice, turns out, all week, even though we didn't hear about it leading up to the game. So he got out there. He did the best he could. You know, he was out there at the beginning of the game. The pain just got to be too great where he couldn't go anymore. There were multiple plays where I felt he just didn't close on guys because he didn't have it. Like, he had guys in his sights, and he just couldn't get to them, literally. And there were even points in the game, you know, he was coming on and off the field. There's one point where he didn't go out. It was a series where they had the interception. Tebow threw the interception. He wasn't out initially, and as they moved it, like, inside the 10, he ran back onto the field, and I think he checked himself back in. Like, I can't prove that, honestly, but I think that he just went out there and was like, I don't care, I'm playing. So, like, the guy was obviously doing all that he could. He was just limited by the injury.
Right. I mean, Urban sounded today like he's really confident Spikes will play. I think you don't play him against Kentucky.
I guarantee he doesn't play against Kentucky. If we're making Gator guarantees this week, Spikes will not play against Kentucky.
Yeah, you have at Kentucky, and then you have a bye week, and then you have, you know, what's built up as one of the biggest regular season games at LSU. And you have a very capable backup in Ryan Stamper. I mean, Stamper looked great on Saturday. Meyer just, you know, praised him to no end. And for, like, it's nice to see, because he's one of those guys, like, to me, I always call Ryan Stamper the David Nelson of the defense. But he produces 10 times more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he comes out and talks all the time. He's really nice. And he was a little bit of a late bloomer. He didn't do things early on in his career. He redshirted. He sat behind some guys. Now he's the backup at middle linebacker, or he starts at outside linebacker. He led the team in tackles, had 3 tackles for loss, 4 fumbles, sack. I mean, Sanford was all over the field on Saturday, and he's going to be really key if Spikes can't play.
Yeah, and Spikes is important, but linebacker is the one position where there really is a lot of depth. You have Stanford, obviously you have Doe, you have Brandon Hicks, John Bostic, Johnny Jenkins, the freshman. So there's a lot of people that can come in there and play with him out.
Yeah, and I would throw a little combination. I would not play him against Kentucky if for no other reason than I don't think Kentucky can beat them, and you might as well let him rest up and not aggravate it further. And I would do a combination of moving Stamper inside and putting in, you know, Doe, Hicks at the outside where Stamper usually is. And I'd let Bostic play a little bit. I mean, if you're not going to burn a redshirt on him anyway, if that's not your plan, let him get in there, see what the kid can do. He's been really impressive against bad teams. Let's see if he can play right now on the SEC level, because if this is going to be a long-term thing for Spikes, then, you know, maybe that will be a better look, leaving Stamper on the outside where he might be a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, and I mean, I think at some point Saturday, the game's probably going to open up. Like, you know, right. I see it being a 3-4 touchdown game, you know. So absolutely at that point, you want John Bostic on, and now you want Stamper off the field because now you don't want Stamper getting hurt. It's right. One of these, you know, like, there's a lot of depth, but then all of a sudden it kind of goes away. You know, like, Jelani Jenkins is still bothered. Brendan Beal is still bothered. I mean, they're still relatively deep. Doe got in and looked pretty good. But Hicks, who was, like, kind of the, like, most improved player of last year, like, halfway through the season or a couple games of the season, took a starting job, hasn't really emerged as much as I thought we'd see him this fall.
Yeah, I've always really liked Brandon Hicks, but it's kind of telling that he hasn't had a starting job yet, because he looked like he was well on his way. And then, you know, A.J. Jones supposedly had a really good offseason. He's looked good out there so far this year. He retook his job back, and then, you know, he hasn't been able to. Doe was the guy on the field late for them in the fourth quarter when they got the ball back and Spikes was on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, for defense, like, I mean, it sounds obvious because they return everyone, but the defense it's just, like, the same issues and positives of 08. You have a really good secondary, really deep linebackers, your ends are pretty good, and you have nobody at defensive tackle. Like it's. I felt like, you know, at the end of last season, they felt like they developed Marsh, and they had Torrey Davis and Sanders, but, like, this year, it's like, what happened to you? Did you, like, lose it all? But I do have to go back to the secondary of Florida is really, really good. Like, and they went back to Ahmad Black and Major Wright starting out there. And you got Johan and Janoris Jenkins. And they're just the best. I'd put them as the best four. I'd put them up against anyone right now.
Yeah, Meyer said that he didn't want to say they were the best in the nation, but that they're the best group he's ever been around. They're the best in the nation for sure, and there's no one that close. I'm going to say that right now. The talent that's back there and the production – Hayden and Jenkins are just two lockdown corners. They're two first-round picks playing on the outside. You got Major Wright and Ahmad Black back there. Major Wright has, you know, proven that he's been a really good player while he's been here, and he has the potential to be a high NFL pick. Ahmad Black's a little undersized, but he had the best game of anyone against Tennessee. He played the run great. He got an interception late. He was all over the field. I wouldn't say it unless it's true, because I was rooting for Will Hill in that battle. And then you got Will Hill, who's only a sophomore. He's a physical specimen. He'll probably be a first-round pick someday, too. So their secondary is just loaded with ridiculous talent.
And we keep talking about how great Will Hill is all the time, but every time you put Black out there in a big game or in a big situation, he just keeps on producing, keeps on getting picks, keeps on making big plays. So maybe Black should just be there.
Yeah, no, I think after Saturday, Black's definitely, he's definitely not, you can't take him off the field after what he did.
And I think the argument for having the four of them together, you know, the four of them who did so well last year and, you know, have done so well in big situations this year, I think that's a really strong argument that whether it's chemistry or just, like, you know, they just happen to play well in those situations, but I think you have to keep those four on the field at the same time.
Yeah, and, you know, at worst, Will Hill gives you a little bit of depth. You know, he can bring him in, he plays some nickel for you, you move him in the box, he covers. He's a good matchup with pass-catching tight ends. When they play Arkansas and DJ Williams comes in, I think you'll see him guard him a lot in man-to-man coverage. So, you know, it just gives you another option, but I think, yeah, I'd go with Ahmad Black and Major Wright at this point.
Despite
my future.
the Joker package got burned against a run, but against the pass, it's still really, really good. I mean, like, we didn't really get to see it against Tennessee because Tennessee was never going to throw the ball. But I think down the road, you're going to see the Joker really messing people up because that formation is just, like, the most talented people on the field with, you know, Charlie Strong blitzing from, like, 60 different angles. Like, I don't know. It's, like, fun to watch when they run it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one last game-related note. Go ahead.
The only thing is they're in the wrong conference for that, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. You know, the SEC football isn't exactly spread them out and throw the ball 60 times a game. So if they draw a team like that in their bowl game, you know, they could possibly use it a lot then. Or, you know, Ole Miss likes to throw the ball at Jevon Snead. You could see it against a team like that. But, you know, most SEC teams, they're going to run a tight end, a fullback, and pound the ball. So, I don't know. They may have to put that on the back burner.
Arkansas, baby. See a lot Arkansas. Of Joker against Arkansas. Ryan Mallett's going to come and love the Joker.
Yeah. Bobby Petrino, he loves to throw it. So, yeah, I think Arkansas and Ole Miss are probably the two best candidates for that.
Arkansas passing 427 yards a game right now.
What? Just
throwing that out.
They haven't played anyone.
Yeah.
Well, oh, they played Georgia.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that game was ridiculous. So Joe Cox threw like five
Georgia's
touchdowns.
Georgia's defense is bad.
Georgia's not good. They're not good this year.
All right. So the one last game, the one last game related note, position probably people didn't realize there was a position battle at. Caleb Sturgis got the start over Jonathan Phillips, kicked 3 field goals, 3 for 3. Has Sturgis won that job for at least the time being?
I think so. Meyer was really high on Sturgis today. He said, like, he made the field goals and boomed them. His three makes were from 29, 35, and 37. Admittedly, I have a really bad angle from the press box to see how well he made the kicks, but he made all his extra points. He made all his field goals. That's more than Jonathan Phillips could say against Troy. I mean, it's kind of a tough thing. I mean, obviously, he had no real big pressure kicks, but, I mean, 3 field goals were important Saturday.
I was surprised that he made the switch. I don't necessarily agree or disagree with it. I think it's maybe inconsequential even who's taking the kicks. I don't feel like John Phillips has done such a bad job where it's like a Hetland situation where you got to get him out of there. Like, he's killing you. Like, he is killing you right now. I don't think that's at all what John had done. I think Caleb just won the job. But I just, out of the loyalty he showed to Hetland when Hetland couldn't make a field goal for an entire season and he still let him kick the whole year, I was shocked that he pulled Phillips, who's the veteran guy who does have a track record, just as Hetland had the track record.
Interestingly enough, Meyer made the comparison today to 06 and said that he's just opening it up just like he opened up in 06.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, right.
In 06, Chris Hetland just kicked everybody out.
He also couldn't remember Chris Hetland's name after the game in the press conference.
He was the kid that couldn't make a field goal.
Yeah.
That's what he called him?
More or less. It was like, he was struggling to make a field goal, kind of looking around for help. Like, you know, who's the guy looking for? Oh, Chris Hetland, yeah. So I was just shocked more than anything else.
More importantly, this is a crippling blow to Kyle's fantasy team.
Yeah, it took zeros too late at kicker.
Didn't set the lineup.
I forgot to handcuff Caleb Sturgis in my draft. So.
All right, and after that, a close win. Florida came out in the Sunday's AP poll with 55 of the 60 first-place votes, inciting rage and fury from the people in this room right now. So let's just talk about that a little bit. 55 out of 60. How much? I guess five people had them where at in those polls?
Yeah, of the five non-first place votes, there was two in second place, one third place vote, and the most shocking of all, the two fifth place votes. Perhaps more shocking for who they have in front of them.
Yeah, that's the real problem with this. Why don't you tell them who the two fifth place
all
people
right,
have
so
in front?
For one of the fifth place ballots, John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News.
I hope you're listening, John.
Yeah. Call you out, Johnny.
Goes, one Alabama, two Miami, three Texas, four LSU, and then five Florida. The most outrageous there. I am the biggest. I am just riding the LSU train, but to have them over Florida is by far the most absurd thing ever.
Yes, agreed.
Okay.
Until
we go to Doug. I clicked on the wrong thing on my laptop. Doug.
That's a weird last name. German.
Doug Lesmeris of the Plain Dealer from Cleveland, Ohio.
Someone could pass this message along to Doug.
Yeah.
Be appreciated.
This, I don't know how he still has his AP vote after this, but his ballot goes one Alabama, two Miami, and then get ready, three Houston from Conference USA, and then four from the Big East, the Cincinnati Bearcats.
Unbelievable.
The Big Least.
And I'm a huge Cincinnati guy, too. I love Cincinnati. And still, having them four is absolutely ridiculous. They've beaten Oregon State, who I also like, but like an unranked team. Yeah. They've beaten Rutgers, who's a joke. Bob, I hope you're listening. And who's the other team they beat?
I don't know. But this guy, I just want to champion some more because he's got Michigan at 10.
Michigan at 10. Oh, my God. This is out of... People should lose their votes when they do stuff like this. This is just unbelievable. I can't, like, first of all, there shouldn't be polls at this time. Before, I just hated preseason polls, and I wanted the preseason poll done away with. And I know a couple of you guys at practice were talking about how there should be no polls at all until, like, 8 weeks in, like BCS style. And I agree with that now because there's just too much knee-jerk BS out there where teams are just haphazardly moving up and down the rankings. They're moving 10, 15 spots every week, just up and down like a yo-yo. It's so stupid. I can't take it. Or have a system where for the first, I don't know, first like 3 or 4 weeks, if a team has a loss, they can't be in front of other teams with no losses. Like, make some kind of policies where, like, some of this makes sense. It's all for nothing at this point. Who cares what people are voting?
They should probably not rank a team in front of a team that they lost to.
Yeah.
Also going to be... We'll get to that later in the
show. I don't
want to
step on the Kyle Jackson.
All right, it'll be good.
Stay tuned for an inspired rant later.
How do we feel about Miami at number two, by the way? I love Miami at this point. I think Jacory Harris is, like we said, a Heisman candidate, like frontrunner at this point. But number two?
I am big on the Hurricane. Like,
number two,
if you go by strictly what you've done on the field, like, if you try to take everything out... You know, they beat FSU and they beat Georgia Tech. And, I mean, Florida has a 10-point win over
Tennessee. Here's the problem with college football. Is it enough to go by what they've done on the field? Because if, let's say it comes time for the end of the season, okay, and Florida and Miami both go undefeated, and Miami's beaten better teams along the way, so you say Miami's done more on the field, who do you put in front of the other one? Because they both have beaten everyone on their schedule, and you still think Florida's a better team, like, if they were to play heads up. The whole ranking system just stupid, because no one can answer that question, which is why we need a playoff in college football.
Don't worry, we have the computer ranking. Oh. So you just put it in an algorithm, and they spit it out.
The trusty computers will save us all.
Hopefully John Hollinger's working on that.
A good, nice little segue here. The BCS Guru is this website that projects. He finds all the different computer rankings and uses the rankings that are going to be in the BCS. Early in the season... You know, he does it as, like, a simulation later in the season, does it as a projection before the actual BCS comes out. But as of this week, according to his simulated rankings, Florida will be third in the BCS. He uses the coaches poll and the AP poll. Since the Harris poll is not out yet, he uses the AP poll. And so far, you know, it doesn't mean much, but computers really hate Florida. Of the five computer rankings out, the computers have Florida first, fourth, 19th, and then two computers have them off their ballot. So algorithms say Florida one of the worst teams in football.
See, you need to trust those computers, machine-like accuracy.
So how many teams are there in Division I football?
119.
That's right. And what's the average computer ranking? I think you said 26 before.
I don't know.
Or 19? That's not one of the worst in college football.
All I know is that their computer ranking, like decimal, is like 0.28. Which is lower than Iowa.
Iowa? They almost lost to Northern Iowa or something?
FSU, UNC, Cincinnati, Miami, Penn State, Boise State. In the computers, they're worse than everyone.
Everyone.
And the best team in the computers, I can't love this anymore, best team in the computers is...
Michigan.
The LSU Tigers.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I almost want to skip to the hating part of the show right now.
But also, let me get in. I really do like Miami, and I don't have a problem with them being as high as whatever.
Number right two?
Now. Number two is too high. Number two. But at the same time, you could do way worse. There are far more egregious mistakes in these people's ballots than
they've
Miami
been made,
too.
They're fine being in the top five. I have to do the top 25. I have Miami four.
I was going
to
say.
It'll fix itself later.
Yeah. Right. So. I think they're a four or five team, not a second-ranked team in the country.
You got anything to say?
These polls all mean nothing.
Agreed.
I mean, they
They're
just
fun.
They give us fodder for the podcast.
Oh, well, yeah. Washington in the top 25 this week. Go Huskies.
Go.
Jake Locker, the West Coast Tebow, you're the man.
Does Washington play Cal, Deifer? You got off the top of your head?
I mean, they do play Cal eventually. I'm
is
not
it, is it at home or do we know? Like, is Washington going to win the Pac-10? Can I get you to say that?
Jake Locker's the best quarterback in the Pac-10.
Might be true, sadly.
Yeah, I don't know who.
And Washington's going to a bowl
game. Oh! They get Cal at home the last week of the season, December the 5th.
None of this matters, guys. Washington's going to be a 7-5
Washington's the third best team in the Pac-10 this year.
No, I disagree.
All right, well, while Deifer's at odds, let's go ahead and put him a little bit more at odds. Every week in the paper, we put out the Swamp Studs, the top three players in each weekend's game. I think it was Ahmad Black came out on top this week, and as we've said before, he was the best player on the defense for Florida, and the defense won on that game. Mike DeFerdinando, to my left, however, said Tim Tebow was the best player on the field for Florida. Mike, defend yourself before we ambush you.
I'm taking a cone of silence here.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
Played the fifth.
I talked about this before. I think Tebow was very important, very instrumental to win. I think he had some mistakes, but I think he was also the reason they won the game. I know everyone's going to jump on me and hate
on
him.
So you think he was the most instrumental for them winning the game?
I, in my opinion, I think he was. I know Ahmad Black had a great game. He had the big pick. He played well on defense. I think Tebow was just as important.
How do you respond to our accusations that Tebow swung the game 17 points worth in the other direction?
He had bad plays, but I think he had other plays that made up for it. He scored the touchdown, 24 carries. I agree that maybe, look, after everyone's like yelled at me the last day and a half, that maybe he shouldn't have been one, but I don't think it's ridiculous that he's on the ballot, and I think two is fine. Him ending up at two is fine.
I think he's the third, maybe, like in a...
I'm not
I left
the only
him
one,
off my ballot.
I'm not the
so.
Only one that voted for T. I would vote him in the highest, but other people had Tebow on their ballot.
Tebow did have 2 third place votes as well.
So I don't think it's absurd that he's on.
I don't think he should have been on the ballot. If you had him at three, I'm not going to kill you for it. But having him at one, you single-handedly put him at number two in the voting.
It's like Nick Saban said, you know, people die for my right to vote. I'm just kidding.
Unfortunately, yeah. Say that. I mean, not. No.
Hey, if I could review my ballot, I would put him lower. After I've been convinced otherwise.
That's unfortunate because it's already in print. So.
But I don't think it's horrific that he is where he is either.
I do. I think it's absolutely horrific. At least Stamper should have been in front of him with the game that he had. And I think Hayden absolutely should have been in front of him too. And I even think Caleb Sturgis should have been in front of him.
Who
I
were your three then?
Mine were Ahmad Black one, and then some combination of Hayden and Stamper. Okay. I don't remember which way I voted, two or three, to be honest.
I was Black, Stamper, Sturgis.
All right, I'd like Black, Stamper, Hayden. I think that would be my three. I don't vote in this, but that would be what I'd do if I could negate
Tebow. I think
the field goals were key here. I don't know.
I also had Sturgis on my ballot. My ballot was Tebow, Black, Sturgis.
Unbelievable.
Right, so you had two out of three.
Yeah, you almost got there.
There's no right or wrong here.
I mean,
this is an opinion. Yes,
there absolutely
this is an opinion thing.
Yeah, you just have the wrong opinion.
You're like the AP poll voter that put Florida 5D for. That's the best comparison.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
You have a rough track record. That really makes this tough. Your voting track record's not pristine.
All right, let's talk about another post-game topic. Phil, you wrote the column in today's paper, and you received a little scathing feedback, I'd say, from the readers, at least. You basically, you know, you didn't take an unpopular stance in the media world. You said, you know, Tennessee, you know, played, you know, pretty much won that game, hypothetically. It's like a moral victory or whatever. Lane Kiffin won, Urban Meyer 0. Your feedback was not so forgiving.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that just, they just need to watch more football. I mean,
feels like joking. No, just keep hating.
Yeah, I mean,
you
like,
shine their haters.
I kind of expected it, but sometimes, like, the alligator reshape, it's just a little apathetic, you know? Like, wasn't quite sure if I'd get any feedback. I got a random Facebook message. I felt really inspired that someone looked me up on Facebook to find me. Several emails
we
and a couple comments.
We read that on air, but we don't have a reliable censoring policy.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he starts out the Facebook message by saying he doesn't want to talk about my content because it's so bad it doesn't need to be talked about. He just goes on to insult me personally, which is awesome because I've never met him. But, you know, some people can't get enough love at home, so they get a good one.
All right. I'm gonna make this statement on air so that everyone knows if it's not abundantly clear already. We are not a biased news outlet for the Gators. If all you want to hear is Gator love, how great the Gators are and how they can do no wrong and you know, they're the greatest team ever and all their players can do no wrong, I'm going to defer you to some other publications. I'm not going to name names. I'm just going to say it's very easy to find if you want that kind of content. That's not what we do here. We try to be as subjective as objective as possible. I'm sorry, not subjective. I just confused everyone out there. But we try to be as objective as possible. We try to just tell it like it is. That's the best we can do. On this podcast alone, I've called out David Nelson for being bad, who I absolutely love as a person. And I said Ahmad Black was great, who I absolutely don't like as a person. So, you know, that's what we try to do the best of our abilities. And I'm sorry if people don't want to hear that, but, you know, that's what real news outlets do, and that's what we're trying to do here at our papers.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're not Gator fans. We're not Gators fans. We're not Gators. That's my favorite insult that people
give.
It's
real
like,
Gator.
You're not a true Gator if you feel this way. It's like, yeah, we're not. Like, we're the independent Florida Alligator. Right. We're separated from that. We are not part of that. We are our own independent news, you know, corporation, you know, reporting on this.
Conglomerate.
Yeah.
From my standpoint, couldn't be happier. I wrote it. Stand by everything I wrote. Lane Kiffin got what he wanted yesterday. Whatever. Yeah. They lost by 10. They look good. I thought Florida was going to win by 50. So. Yeah.
I just find it interesting. People seem surprised. Like, people were, like, outraged. It's like, this is what everyone's saying.
Yeah, like, it's like the talk of the nation of college football.
You name the publication, ESPN Sports Illustrated, they're all saying it right now.
I just want to point out that Phil got more hate mail for telling the truth than Kyle did for insulting an entire school of college football
fans. I told the truth, too. You just juxtaposed that as if I didn't tell the truth.
I see what you did there.
Interesting because I feel like I've said some more, things that would not resonate well with the readers and no response. So it must be you personally.
Yeah.
Phil on the hill, really?
Good. I hope, like, now, like, people keep coming back and hating me every time.
You have to try to be funnier. Because if you're funny while you insult people, they'll just laugh with you. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, oh, he's right, I am retarded. But, like, if you tell it like it is and you don't make jokes, then that's when it really starts to get to them. So.
That's true.
Truth hurts.
All right, and before we move on and give out our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week, we're going to revisit the Gator Guarantees we made on a Friday show. On that show was me, Kyle, Deefer here, and McCall, who is not here.
I wasn't on that show. You're thinking of someone else.
Yeah, clearly. Because the Kyle who said that Tennessee would get shut out and UF would get its first defensive touchdown on a scoop and score, that couldn't have been you, right? No?
I messed up. I was wrong. I was very, very wrong.
All right. Do better next week.
Fortunately for you, the rest of us were no better, except for one of us here. But I was certainly no better. I said that Brandon James historically plays great against Tennessee, would score 2 touchdowns. You know, he almost scored 2 touchdowns. If he'd broken a kick return and caught that pass in the end zone, maybe. But as it stands, no, he has scored none. So I am once again over 2. McCall.
That was the sweetest hit ever, by the way.
That was quite a hit, yeah.
He's got to make a play. I maintain he's got to make a play.
He caught the ball. I maintain no one on the ball. No one on Florida catches the ball.
You got to make a play. When you're in the
end zone, no one on Florida catches that.
I don't care. Fine. You can make all
the
plays.
There might be 3 wide receivers in college football that catch that.
All right. You're exaggerating. Okay. Florida's the worst team in college football, also.
119th out of 119th.
That's right. All right. McCall said one guarantee we all liked, that Florida would get a jump pass touchdown, but he also said one that I think we all laughed at, that Moody would score a touchdown.
Law.
Needs to touch the ball.
Both were wrong. And then the one person who came out on top somehow in this was Deefer over here. He said that Eric Berry would get double-digit tackles. Sorry, he was right. He had 11. And that he would get an interception. He was also right. And he was a little bit wrong, though, in that he also mentioned him making a couple of big plays on offense. I don't believe he got in the game on offense.
I would argue that if he did, Tennessee might have won.
That's outrageous. Wow. But is Eric Berry, like, the kryptonite to Tebow's Superman?
He's
Lex
Luthor.
2 of 12
picks. He's Lex Luthor.
He's got no wins, man. I'd say no. You played to win the game.
That's not his fault.
He can't do any more.
The defense was there. It's not his fault, but at the same time, I mean, at the end of the day, Tebow's going home happy and Eric Berry isn't. Despite their
arch rival.
He's going to be cashing their check next fall.
All right, Eric Berry's the man.
He'll get the last laugh. I mean, he'll be a top 5 NFL pick.
All right, and Phil, read off our, since you weren't here, and you can say this unbiased and, you know, without laughing too much, give the score predictions we made on Friday's show.
Oh, are you referring to the outrageous score predictions, Adam?
Yeah, those are the ones,
outrageous
Phil.
Ones? Oh, because I thought maybe your real ones were in a different document.
Nope, Phil, they were not.
I've got Adam 63-10. Kyle,
that is what I said.
No, that's 56-0.
Oh, you're reading that wrong.
Deefer,
26-0.
Deefer, 63-24.
87
and,
points.
McCall, semi-reasonable, 38-10.
Yeah, McCall is the only one who was sort of within the realm there.
Stick to your day jobs, Phyllis.
I mean, I don't know what happened, man.
Yeah. Overall, for predicting, not such a very good week.
We've done better.
Yeah, certainly. And we will do better. I promise you right now, we will do better starting next week. No one will try better to predict better starting this Friday. But let's give out our weekly awards here. We're going to start off with our Reggie Nelson Awards. Let's start with Phil. All
right. Mine's going to the Washington Huskies football team. I mean, everybody predicts
larceny. Larceny on the Sports Podcast.
What?
Go ahead, Phil.
Don't worry. You're not the first to pull something like this. Go ahead.
All right. I caught that about 30 minutes ago, but okay. I haven't written it. All right. Anyway, go to the Washington Huskies. Don't know what the outrage is right now. USC fell in yet another conference road opener. And I was really impressed, though, because Washington, like, Washington was a trendy upset pick, but won anyway, so got to give credit to the Huskies.
Did Jake Locker play well, Phil?
Yes, I believe he did.
I just want to say it deeper, yet again, karma's a female dog, and Phil, this will at some point happen to you over the rest of the year, I'm sure.
Kyle. All right.
Wow. All right, my Reggie Nelson is going to go to the Florida defense, a little late audible here, because the offense was embarrassingly bad, and they really stepped up and saved them and showed that they can be the defense that everyone was building them up to be previous to the year, and had it not been for them, they could have got upset. So, Florida defense, good job. You saved the day.
Well, despite the fact that Phil just pilfered my Reggie,
I'm really sorry. This was totally not intentional. I literally
despite the fact that I gushed about Jake Locker in Washington some 20 minutes ago.
You should go Huskies. Come on. Like, who else was this guy?
I didn't know it was Reggie.
My beloved Washington Huskies and Jake Locker got it done against USC. Jake Locker's the greatest thing ever. Yada, yada. Phil stole my thunder.
All right. Well, then I'll just go ahead and give out my Reggie. I'm going to give it to Monty Kiffin. I don't know if he's gotten enough love, for what he did to the Florida offense. People don't realize, Monty Kiffin was closer to being an NFL head coach than he was a college defensive coordinator. So, he's the man coming in here and just, mm-hmm. showing the offense, the college ranks how it's done. And it's mm-hmm. People are like, spread doesn't work in the pros. I wonder why. It's because great defensive geniuses like Monty Kiffin coaching the NFL. I'm giving my Reggie to Monty Kiffin. All right. Let's do our Kyles. Let's once again start with Phil.
All right, mine is going to the...
Hopefully this won't be Defers as well.
Or mine.
I call this one as well, so I'm going way off the base here. No one's going to copy me here. I'm going against the company called Reynolds, Formula One race company. No, it's the most outrageous thing I've ever seen.
Ever.
They're in a race, and they ordered one of their drivers to crash so that one of their other drivers would win the race. I guess he was way out in front. It was a Formula One race, and with the caution rules or something, he was at a big advantage. So they literally, had one of their drivers crash into a wall at, high speed, could have died. I couldn't be more mad at this, except for the fact that their top two people stepped down. Big whoop, take that, goat, or whatever. But, they're on a suspended ban. It's essentially probation. If they do anything in the next 2 years, they can't ever compete in Formula One again. But that's it. That's all they got. People could have died. It literally one of the top cheating things I've ever seen worldwide. But
you don't understand what it's like to be a team player. That's why.
Apparently not. Give up your life for a race.
All right, let me go to mine next because mine's not that good. I'm going to give it to the Florida receiving corps. Obviously, an abysmal performance. I've criticized you in the past. I say you're all a bunch of third receivers forced into the spotlight, except for Aaron Hernandez, who has the talent. I don't know if he was sick, hurt, whatever, but he obviously didn't perform up to snuff either Saturday. So let's go with Kyle now.
All right. I have a very specific Kyle Jackson here. Ryan Finley, if you're listening, you know what you've done already. He's a writer for the Arizona Daily Star. And lucky for us, we have a sweet website where we see all the AP voters' polls individually. And you accidentally left your name on yours because you have Miami at number 20. So not only do you have Miami at number 20, which is, disgustingly low.
The lowest among
all
voters.
Lowest of all. Not actual hyperbole. He's literally the lowest of all voters. He has them 5 spots behind Georgia Tech. Now, if you watch college football, which Ryan Finley obviously doesn't, despite the fact that he has an AP vote, I think Miami just beat Georgia Tech. That just happened?
That's
what was the score? I don't remember, but it wasn't close. Close enough where I didn't cover. All right, I'll just say that. They absolutely manhandled Georgia Tech. Ja'Cory Harris ran amok out there, and it was just a complete disaster for Georgia Tech. And yet, somehow, in your AP vote, they're 15 and Miami is 20. And this is the single biggest reason I've ever seen to have a playoff system, because you have guys like Ryan Finley determining what teams play who at the end of the season. Even if it's only a small component, even if he's only 1/60th of 1/3 of the system, the fact that people like him are directly involved in the decision-making process for who plays at the end of the year for the national championship is disgusting. Something needs to be done about it. You can't have a guy... I can't think of any logic that would have Georgia Tech 5 spots above Miami.
None. And that's the highest anybody has Georgia Tech as
yep,
well.
Also, and he also has Kansas the highest at 12th.
Disgusting. I'm disgusted.
All right, Deeper, round us out here.
All right, well, story time, kids, gather around.
They're huddled around the radio. It's by the fireplace.
I happen to live very close to the football stadium, and we make money on the weekends in our house by parking cars in our yard. Very common practice. Usually, people pay to do this.
Usually.
This weekend was different, though. This weekend, I woke up, I went outside, and I noticed that there was a car parked in my backyard, a car that I did not talk to and did not recognize.
He did not speak to that car.
It was not a Transformer. So me and my roommate go outside to see what's up with his car, and I guess the driver of the car was already fled the scene, but his girlfriend was, like, staggering behind because she, I guess, you know, whatever. So we confront her, ask her why she parked in our yard without our knowing, and her reasoning for it was that her boyfriend used to live in my house.
Now, that's awesome. Girls are so useless.
I'm not sure in what realm of, like, thinking this is okay, but she thought because her boyfriend used to live in our house that it was okay to park her car in our yard. It wasn't. Now, we tried to get it towed. But you have to actually own the house to have the superior towing company come tow a car, so we couldn't do that. So luckily, my roommate Tyler, in all his genius, found bricks in our shed and put them under the tires of this car and blocked the car in with a different car.
Essentially booted their car.
Booted their car.
That's awesome, by the way.
Vigilante justice.
So eventually we come back. The driver comes back with the girl, and we have some words. I thought this was going to escalate into a fight. It didn't. He ended up paying us anyway. But I couldn't have been more upset or, like, surprised that someone would just park in my yard for no reason. Like, how do people get away with this kind of thing? Who thinks this is okay?
Their only logic was just that he used to live at that house, right?
Like somehow that made it okay.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Unbelievable. You have a name?
I have no name.
I've got a name, so we can call,
him out. Yeah.
In front of our millions of listeners.
An anonymous vigilante.
It's probably Ryan Finley.
Yeah. That guy's just screwing everything up. Yeah, screwing everything up this week. All right, that wraps it up for this show. We went just a little bit over the 40 to 60 minutes of relentless effort that we promised, so I guess we're in overtime at this point. Mm-hmm. But send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. We've already got a couple responses to that new address. I like the feedback that's coming in there, so keep sending it to that address, and thanks for listening.